Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons on the Score.
Winners of 11 straight, champions of the Big Ten, Ohio State, and here come the Buckeyes.
The Tide get a quick one here. They're up to the line in a hurry, and it's Yeldon. And I don't think he got there. Nice play by the Buckeye defense. Lee and Perry, the linebackers. The dream continues for the Buckeyes. The nightmare starts for number one Alabama. They are no more.
With the 102nd pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the San Diego Chargers select Joshua Perry, linebacker, Ohio State.
Rookie Drew Kedron at Texas A&M sends it to the rookie Fuller. Oh, and he is devoured at the other end. Joshua Perry was there. He's a top pick.
Carr hands it off. And the defense does stop. And he's taken down by Joshua Perry, the rookie out of Ohio State.
Welcome back inside of our studio. Maria Taylor here with you. Joshua Perry, Chris Sims, and Nicole Auerbeck. And let's start with Riley Leonard.
Riley Leonard's been on his game throwing the football today, Josh. I know you've been impressed.
Yeah, I mean, they spent the bye week, and it seems like, to your point, play actions. We've seen the RPO game. And when they drop back, it's been quick passes. They're not asking him to hold the ball in the pocket, look for the big throws downfield. And for Notre Dame, it might take a little longer to get up and down the field, but right. It's definitely a more efficient way for them to try to move the ball.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
So excited that this guy had time for our show. You can check him out on Twitch right now. He is one of the hosts over at CHSN, is doing a great job over there covering everything, including college football. You can also check him out on Saturdays on NBC. That show that they're doing over there on NBC and Peacock, Big College Countdown, is excellent, and so is he as an analyst. Joshua Perry now joining Matt Spiegel and myself here on the Score. What's up, sir?
Well, I just heard that little all the little deal that was going on. It's kind of crazy. I appreciate you guys having me, Lawrence. Always a fantastic time to catch up with you. Excited to talk ball here.
Yeah, we are too. So obviously, like, we know each other, but Spiegel was like, "Wait, I don't know this guy. I want to get to know him a little bit."
Hello?
Are there some questions you would like to ask JP?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. You, as a member of the San Diego Chargers and the Indianapolis Colts, is one thing, but you, as an Ohio kid who plays for Ohio State and plays extremely well as a freshman and ends up being a captain on a national championship team, holy hell, man. Like, that must mean that Ohio State is, like, deeply a part of your soul, of your freaking essence. Like, how big of a role in your life has Ohio State football played?
Well, it is in my soul and in my essence. I grew up outside of Columbus. So I was originally born in Nashville, Tennessee, and my dad's profession had us move around to a bunch of places. Now, when I was a young kid and I heard that we had to move to Ohio, I'm like, what is in Ohio? I'm like, cows? Like, what is my childhood going to be like? What are my adolescent years going to be like? And then you grow up 30 minutes away from the horseshoe and understand that there is so much that the state of Ohio can give. So throughout my recruiting process, it was a pretty easy choice for me once I got the offer that I was going to go to Ohio State. I got there my freshman year and we had a bowl ban due to Tattoo Gate. It was also Urban's first year. So it's a 12-0 season, couldn't play in the postseason. My sophomore year, we went 12-0 in the regular season, then lost two straight in the Big Ten Championship and Orange Bowl to Clemson. Coming into my junior year, high expectations, win our first game, come back, play at home in our home opener, lose to Virginia Tech. And so I'm like, man, I came here. I'm like, we had opportunities to win Big Ten Championships, national championships, haven't done it. Two games in, we lose. I'm like, I don't know if it's going to be the year. And it ended up being that one. And that was a pivotal moment for me as a player, as a leader in that locker room. But I also think it really informed my future. Because being a champion, I think it puts you in different air, especially when I'm back in the city of Columbus. But it gives me credibility as an analyst. It's a guy who did not play forever in the league. Like, it was everything for me. So I'm super appreciative of that moment. It's always fun to relive. But my Bucks over the weekend certainly struggled with the team we beat in the championship in Oregon.
Yeah, let's follow up on that then. Dan Lanning getting credit for, like, playing chess with the too many men on the field that burned some seconds off the clock. Do you believe he actually did that intentionally, or is he getting credit for happenstance in retrospect?
I'll, I'll let him tell the story the way that he wants to. It seems that it was intentional, but it's a risk regardless. And I know NCAA actually just came out with the ruling today that they're going to change the enforcement of the rule. I don't necessarily think they should, because I think 90% of the time somebody tries to do that, particularly in college, and they end up messing it up. And Dan Lanning historically has been a guy who likes to play in the margins, on the fringes of the game, who makes decisions that many other coaches would say are questionable. And it's hurt him in the past. It hurt him against Washington last year. It's the reason why he didn't have a big win on his resume, is largely some of the riverboat gambling. So it worked out for him. I would say that for Ohio State, it never should have gotten to that point in the first place. They had a late speed out that probably would have been a good completion on that play. Before that, they had the OPI, which was a tough thing to deal with. So there's like a million things that happened in the game. But for Dan Lanning, like, you know, when you win, you get to tell the story of the game. So if he wants to say that he did it on purpose, I'm going to sit here and believe him.
JP, how do you feel about how regular season games are going, knowing that the CFP is in everyone's mind with the expanded playoffs? Do these games mean any more or any less to you now? Because you know that a two-loss Ohio State team might still find itself in the playoff.
I think a two-loss Ohio State is squarely in the playoff conversation, but I'll push back against anybody who tries to tell me that the regular season games don't matter anymore. Like, you know this, Lawrence, but go talk to the people down there in Tuscaloosa and ask them how they felt when Kalen DeBoer lost a game to Vanderbilt, who had never beaten a number one team in the history of their program. They're like the cellar dwellers of the SEC. You don't think people cared about that? Like, I got on Twitter for the last 3 days looking at Ohio State fans in an absolute meltdown. When Notre Dame lost to NIU, do you think that people were like, oh, well, Notre Dame's got a clear path to the playoff as long as they went out? Like, no, people wanted to fire Marcus Freeman. So, like, do we have this idea of teams having more life even when they lose a game? Yes. Do I think it's any less important to the people who view college football as their favorite sport that a team is still alive? No, like, people overreact all the time. I think it's the greatest thing about watching college football.
What's crazy is that, yeah, people, whether fans of Alabama, were shocked by the Vandy thing. And what I thought was interesting is the level of panic the next week against South Carolina, because that game was touch and go. It could have, and that would have been the end. Like, had they lost that game, that would have been the end of Alabama. So the regular season still can matter, especially if your team puts itself in a bad situation. So it's fun to be able to kind of talk about this in big terms, and I'm excited to see how the rest of this thing goes this season. How have you felt about expanded Big Ten? This is strange, man. I remember we talked during Big Ten media days and you were down there. It's really weird to see some of these matchups, and I'm still getting used to it.
It's so much fun. And like, I'll even, you know, with the SEC as well, like, we got Georgia and Texas playing and it feels like a treat to us. Like, that's a conference game. You know, this is here to stay. I think it's been unique to watch, because a lot of the question was like, how do the West Coast teams adapt to the style of play in the Big Ten? And I would make the argument that there was always a part where the West Coast teams were going to have to change, but the teams in the Big Ten were too. And frankly, for a team like Oregon, for example, there wasn't a lot of a learning curve for them. They were already playing big boy ball to begin with. You start to look at Washington, I do think that the new staff and the roster turnover certainly shows UCLA is in some trouble. And I think Lincoln Riley is going to get into weird territory out there on the West Coast. But the other thing that's been fun is the way that the schedules have changed for teams in the Big Ten. I'll use Indiana as the best example of this. They're sitting at 6-0 right now. I think there's a realistic path for them to get to 10 wins. I don't think there's really been a time where we've said that there's a realistic path for Indiana to get to 10 wins. But now you're starting to look at more balanced schedules where they avoid a team like Penn State. I would say a similar thing for Rutgers, even though nobody in this city cares. Like, they had a very clear path at the start of the year because they didn't play Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, or USC. Like, this is what the new world of the Big Ten gives us, is like a almost what America wants, a strong middle class that feels like they can function in the conference.
Big time linebacker in the Big Ten and then the NFL, Joshua Perry. So let me ask you, as you're here in town, Matt Eberflus, a linebacker. We love when he talked about meeting Dick Butkus and said, just a couple linebackers around, just reading keys, talking about reading keys. And two real good linebackers on the Bears with Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. heart and soul of this defense, perhaps. You like watching this Bears defense? You must.
I do. And shout out to Flus. He's a guy who spent a lot of time in the great state of Ohio as well. I believe he went to Toledo. So a couple of Ohio linebackers there. Listen, it's amazing, right? Like, I think we all had expectations for this defense to be able to do some special things, particularly the way they finished off last season. It was a big reason why people had faith in the Bears at the end of the year anyway. But I do think, regardless of the level of play in the era that we live in, like, your defense has to be built with a strong middle, right? Like, you have to have really good linebackers. This is because you got to have guys who can get downhill, thump in the run game. But as we know, the way teams like to spread the ball around the field, those guys got to be able to chase and cover. And so that's exactly what this Bears defense is doing. And listen, Caleb, young quarterback, he's starting to play much better. But one of the great gifts you can give is a strong run game, but also a really reliable defense to give your quarterback more cracks at it. So that's been a lot of fun to watch. And I know Flus has got to be really happy about the product so far.
It's interesting that the Bears only play two linebackers almost all the time, with Kyler Gordon doing what he does as a nickel. It's like, and there are times when we're breaking down plays. Dave Wanstead here with us the other day was like, oh, yeah, it's the backside linebacker. Oh, no, it was Edmonds, because they're moving around. Like, so NFL defense has changed. Have you got more teams playing it with just two backers? Hasn't it, Joshua?
Yes. And, you know, it's like the reason why I probably never hit my stride in the league. I came in, I'm 6'4", and I was, at the time, I was 255. I'm a little bit north of that right now. But, you know, the days of the big linebackers, right, like the Urlacher and Briggs, those days don't exist anymore. It's not a game for guys who are that big. But the thing that you need to have is the versatility, which I think they have on the Bears defense right now. So certainly we might see more sets where you've got the nickel out there instead of the third linebacker. Of course, you got to have a guy ready to go when it gets time to really dig down there, you know, third and fourth down, stopping the run in short yardage situations. But the idea that they have athletes there in the middle of the defense is the most important part.
What would you say has been most impressive of what you've seen of Caleb Williams from the beginning of the season to where we are right now?
I mean, I think that he came in and talked about this process of wanting to get better and improving. I think he's done that. Like, week after week, I think we see him not make the same mistakes over and over. And I think it's really important. Like, the last handful of weeks, cut down on the interceptions, which is one of the key indicators to success. Any coach will tell you that. He's been very efficient as well. And that's decision-making with the football, which is always a challenge for young quarterbacks. I will say, part of the reason why this has gotten better is when you start to look at the pass game, it's not so much like straight drop back and try to let routes develop down the field. That's not where the offensive line for the Bears is right now. They've incorporated a little bit more of a screen game. They've incorporated a little bit more of a play action game. And I do think that helps Caleb stay clean in the pocket. Now, the other thing, which we knew was going to translate, is when it comes time to play backyard football, he's going to be one of the best in the NFL at doing it. But I think it is this idea of week after week, let's not make the same mistake. And he's tried to avoid that.
When you look at Jaden Daniels, what do you see?
He is ridiculous, man. Like, I think he is a very special player. And again, I think we have to acknowledge Cliff Kingsbury and what he has done to make an NFL offense feel like college for Jaden Daniels. Right. Like, we're looking at a true RPO system. We're looking at a system that inherently puts defenders in conflict. If you want to stop the run, you got an easy entry pass. If you want to play for the pass, they can run the football. And oh, by the way, they have a quarterback who is willing to run an offense that lets him do that. And I think it's allowed him to adjust as well as we've seen any rookie coming into the league. That's not a traditional pocket passer. So once again, you got great skill set and something that a lot of people marveled at in the draft process, but you get him with the right type of coordinator who actually lets him play the game the way he's supposed to play it, and you see the results that you can get.
So my gut tells me that the ceiling for Caleb is higher than that of Jaden because of how much pocket stuff Caleb is showing he's able to do early on. Is that fair to go that kind of thought process?
Yeah, I think Caleb's learning curve enhances faster than Jaden's does because he is more of a pocket passer. These are both guys who are very talented with their legs. We understand that. But Caleb Williams, we have seen with the arm talent what he can do. I think Jaden Daniels naturally tried to be a pocket passer in college. I think at LSU, one of the things he wanted to do was operate from the pocket to prove that he was a guy who could play in the NFL. I think his best skill set is when he involves his legs. And so I think the learning curve to being a true pocket passer in the NFL is a little bit steeper for him. Both of these guys, tremendous upside, but I do agree with the idea that Caleb, as like a prototypical NFL guy, it happens quicker for him.
So Joshua Perry from CHSN and NBC is making his maiden voyage on the Spiegel and Holmes show. This is fun. You seem like a good guy to ask this, to ask about this. We haven't played this yet, and Lawrence is not letting me turn the page to the Commanders game, and I'm grumpy about it. So if we got to stay in the Jacksonville game, here's Andre Sisco, the Jaguars safety, talking about how he thinks they quit. And I want to ask you about defenders being connected or not, according to Andre Sisco.
Yeah, it's really bad. I just felt like it was, how should I say this? A lot of quit, and last line of defense, you know, in a situation like that, you can feel when we're playing as one and when we're not, and felt very early in the game, kind of once things kind of, maybe at halftime, that we weren't playing as one.
Not playing as one, and he went on to like talk about their safety and how you're worried about your safety if your teammate is not doing the right thing, that you could get hurt. And so what is that? How does that translate to you on the field? If some people quit, how does that affect the rest of you on defense if a couple people have quit?
I mean, everybody, you know, goes back to some of the cliches about football being the ultimate team sport. You got to have 11 guys on the same page. I mean, imagine if you are a safety and you've got a defensive line that has no interest in you know, creating any resistance for a runner that's getting ready to go through the line of scrimmage. You got linebackers that are half-heartedly tackling people, and you're the guy who's got to get them to the ground. You got, you know, 210 pounds barreling full speed down at you. Like, that is a compromised spot to be in. And it, one of the interesting things about the NFL to me, this happens all the time. It happens all the time because it, my experience in college, the coaches can play mind games on you to try to keep you engaged, right? Like, it's really hard for college players to feel like they can disengage from a season, and especially this early on. In the NFL, these dudes' checks are hitting no matter what. And if they don't like the guy who's coaching them, or they don't like what's going on, they will express it, whether it's vocally or whether it's through their actions. But ultimately, if one guy decides that he wants to go off and do that and not everybody's on the same page, it does end up becoming a bit of a dangerous situation.
One more thing that we want to ask you, and it's about, look, you had to earn money as a special teamer when you were in the league. Cole Kmet, our guy, special teams player of the week because he came in and he did a great job of long snapping. Is there, if 2016 Joshua Perry sees that, is he happy for Cole Kmet, or is he furious because you were busting your ass trying to break up a wedge and no one gave you special teams player of the week?
Man, listen, I'd feel 50-50 about it if I'm being honest, right? Like, it's great that you got guys you can insert in there, like, hey man, what happens? Who's our backup long snapper? You know, do we have a special situation? That's perfectly fine. It is different than running down and having to bust through the wedge. I did that as a kickoff coverage guy. I'm also a dude who suffered 6 concussions playing the game of football. Like, those two things are correlated with one another. And so, like, the long snapper and all the protection you get, they can't hit you until your head is up. And it's like, you got guys, well, they don't even do it anymore running through the wedge, but you got guys out here who are like, you know, in the line of fire, kind of dangerous. I'd be like, okay, enjoy your special teams player of the week, but coach, me and you got to have a conversation about that.
First long snapper ever.
It's wild.
And he's the backup.
Yeah. We're later on in the show, we're going to have Patrick Manley on that did it for 16 years. He's a regular with us, and he was renowned as the best long snapper in the league.
And had no chance
and
to win this
never,
award.
Never, ever won this award. So we can't wait to ask him. JP, what's the next thing that you're getting done on CHSN?
So we got the big college football show coming up this afternoon. It's myself and Jake Butt, who's a Michigan Wolverine. We played against each other in college. He grew up in Columbus as well. I've known him forever. I think we do a phenomenal show over there, but I'd love the people to tell us what their thoughts are. But we get you set for a great weekend here in Big Ten football, and that's what we're doing.
Joshua, we appreciate you jumping on, man. Thanks so much, and continued success. Every time I see you on NBC or on CHSN, I just smile because I'm like, this guy is a star, and I'm glad that people are recognizing it.
Man, I appreciate you. Always appreciate the opportunity. Take care, fellas.
Thanks, Joshua. Joshua Perry, good dude. Enjoyed that very much. When you look back, Tattoo Gate that he referenced at the beginning.
It sounds so ridiculous.
It's so absurd. Terrell Pryor and four others, including Boom Heron, not Anthony Heron, but Boom Heron, suspended because they got tattoos in exchange for autographs and jerseys and football-related items. And now in the age of NIL, and it was silly even then, but right now it looks like this weird anachronism from a completely different era, and it's less than 15 years ago.
I saw a story today about Diego Pavia, the quarterback at Vanderbilt, who was at New Mexico State. He beat Alabama this year. He beat Auburn last year. And, you know, he had that epic post-game interview. He was mad today, and he's like, yeah, someone took my name, my image, and my likeness, put it on a T-shirt, and is selling it. And he's telling people, like, that I'm not getting any of that money. So please don't support that. And it just tells you, like, how different.
And the coaches and the AD are probably like, let's help spread this message for Diego.
Right. Let's put out our own shirt that's Vandy approved and collective approved so that he can actually get the money. Because Diego Pavia is not going to the NFL. Like, NIL for a guy like Diego Pavia or for a guy like JP. JP's fringe, right, NFL player.
Right.
But he was huge in Columbus.
So you stay an extra, he'd be one of those guys staying an extra year to make that NIL money.
I mean, now when he goes home, I mean, he's got a national championship ring. But think about that. Like, think about what that looks like for him the next season as a national champion and what he could have made. I mean, I'm not trying to count my boy's money. Like, he got some money. But I'm just saying that as with NIL rules now, had they been that 7 years ago, he'd be real rich.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Just a very weird thing. And I'm glad we finally got to hear from Andre Sisco about the quitting of the Jaguars, as we're still hanging around in this week.
See, there was all this stuff that we still needed to get to before we could turn the page.
God. What have you decided? Shane, when am I allowed to turn the page? Have you decided?
Not until next week when there's another game. There's nothing to turn the page yet.
Monday we can turn the page.
Monday?
Yeah, I feel like Monday's fair.
I'm not coming in Friday.
You okay with that?
I can't.
It's an off week. Like, don't turn the page yet. You haven't seen the Commanders play this weekend's game.
We have to preview the bye.
The whole purpose of turning the page is listening to the opposition's coach and other players talk about the Bears. That's the point of it.
I want to do the research. I want to do the research on it.
Then start now and save it for next week.
Save it for Monday, and then we'll turn the page and we'll have sound bites and everything else.
So by that logic, you better hope they ask the Commanders about the Bears in Sunday's postgame.
All right, Tanny. All right, I'm sorry.
No, he's right.
Now I feel like I upset him.
He's right. Well, no.
Oh, that's evergreen.
That is evergreen.
That's every day.
Damn, that sucks. I'm going to kill myself.
Don't do that. Yeah, I don't even think you should say that.
That's too far.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far.
Well, that's evergreen.
Shane took it a bridge too far.
Everclear
is correct.
When we come back, is Lonzo Ball going to play tonight?
I think Lonzo Ball's going to play tonight.
1,006 days since the last time he's played.
That's crazy.
At least I'm not saying it until I see it. I'm not saying he's playing until I see it.
That's some conspiracy-ish right there.
I don't know if it's conspiracy. It's just crazy. And we'll talk about it. We'll go through the timeline. We'll let you hear from Lonzo Ball. He's back in a Bulls uniform, we think. We'll discuss it next here on The Score.